Live from Miami, Florida.
I am Linda.
And I am Bella.
And this is our podcast, Mostly Peaceful Latinas, where every week we will discuss current events, politics, pop culture,
and everything else related to the state of the clown world. Hello and welcome to another episode of Mostly Peaceful Latinas. I'm your host, Linda.
And I'm your host, Bella.
And before we get started, please don't forget to subscribe, like, and share our content. We're very grateful for your support, but we need to keep growing our channel and able to bring truth and news to the people.
Stay loud. Help us stay loud.
Absolutely. So today we're going to go over a couple of headlines that are making the news cycle and a lot of talk about gun control, particularly from the leaders of the free world, Justin Trudeau and Joe Biden. Joe Biden has gone on this unhinged radical rant about banning 9mm handguns, or saying that
high caliber weapons
like handguns, which is literally what I sleep with right next to my bed. very, very concerning. I don't know if they're going to walk back that statement, because he always like rambles on and then they have to save him.
But it's what we've, he ran his campaign on this.
Yeah.
Like, these are comments that he made while he was actively running. I mean, he publicly said he would have made Beto O'Rourke what was he going to appoint him as?
I don't know what he was going to, but I do remember.
In charge of gun control.
Yeah, basically.
Who openly said that he was going to come get our guns.
So this is basically what he said. I think he was like walking out in the White House lawn where all the reporters are on. And then they're asking him about the tragedy in Uvalde. And he goes to say that 9mm bullet blows the lung out of your body, and saying that there's no need for this to be a form of protection.
Right.
Okay, right.
Because a 22 caliber would get lodged in a lung, and then there's more possibility that you might be able to get it out and save a life. I'm not quite sure where the thought process comes from, because my idea is that if my life is in danger and someone's trying to kill me
or rape me
or bring harm to my family,
it's deadly force. That's what they teach you. That's actually, if you've ever taken these courses, whether it's the very beginning, like, you don't want to just shoot to shoot, like, you're gonna
use force with intent.
And this goes back to the Democrats are starting to change their rhetoric or their narrative from gun control, because they want to sound less authoritarian and going into safety. So I actually read this on someone's blog today. They said, notice how all of the mainstream media and Democrat talking heads and the blue check marks on Twitter are no longer saying gun control, they're saying safety. And so I did a quick research on those two terms, gun safety on Twitter, and then you see all of the blue check marks popping up and saying it's not about gun control. They don't want to sound authoritarian left. They know they're losing the middle, the center left, and they're running towards the Republican. Plus, there are Democrats who own guns. There are many Democrats who own guns, particularly a 9mm handgun, which is what I think many
popular,
Americans, is right. One of the most popular,
ammunition out there.
So it's what we've been saying. You give Democrats an inch, right? And they want to take, what is the saying, the whole foot?
I don't know, se llevan el brazo.
that's basically what it means in Spanish. And then once we turn over to Canada, it's an different animal. It's what I was trying to tell my followers today, that there are so many liberals applauding Justin Trudeau on his national freeze on handguns. And one thing that people need to be clear is that there's no Second Amendment right in Canada, in the Canadian Constitution. We just actually verified online, and there's no right to bear arms. And therefore, everything is regulated through the feds, unlike the American system, which is that most gun laws are through the state laws.
I think that it has a lot to do with just the way that, I mean, I don't know that there's any country anywhere in the world that respects gun ownership like we do here in America because of the Second Amendment. You know, and I think that one of the most frustrating things for gun owners is the lack of knowledge that most people who scream gun control have. They don't, you know, they think that AR stands for assault rifle.
Right.
Like, there's a basic knowledge that's that most gun owners have that the people that go against them just don't. And I think that that's what makes the conversation so frustrating, that you have a bunch of people that know nothing about ownership, right? Trying to tell you, most people, whenever these cases come up, it's usually not legal gun owners that are the problem. It's these illegal guns that are in the streets that are going to remain in the streets regardless of what it is that, what measures it is that they would want to take place, you know?
I think it's, you know, we're going to talk about the Colombian election later, but I'm Colombian, and getting a legal gun, it's extremely difficult there. It's actually the military who has the rights to, like, the ammunition, and what's one of the biggest black markets in Colombia and in Venezuela is illegal gun trading. Right. It's, like, part of, like, La Guerrilla and the far-left rebels. It's part of, like, their income, what they do. It's not just drug trafficking and kidnappings and stuff like that, but a lot of their income comes from guns. So
all you do is just push it into a black market, right? When you don't have it, when you don't have a free open market for it, all it's going to do is create a black market, because people are going to want to protect themselves, because criminals by definition don't follow the law,
right?
So it doesn't matter.
It's already illegal to kill, right? Like that's one thing that these people that want to, what you said, they talk about gun control and whatnot. It's like, you're not taking into consideration that the person that's going to commit this act of violence is already breaking the law. They're killing someone, which is illegal in all 50 states. So,
you know, there's always conversations about, let's talk about the Second Amendment in general, right?
So absolutely.
I want to read it out loud as it stands in the Bill of Rights, which is...
It needs to be reread.
Because Joe Biden loves talking about, I showed you the video earlier about just buy a shotgun. Why do you need all these rounds of ammunition? Like, just buy a shotgun so you can scare people. Or, you know, why do you need this many rounds to go hunting? Enough, you know, it's enough with the idea that Americans need guns because we're hunting. I live in Miami, Florida. I'm not going hunting for anything except maybe iguanas. Maybe iguanas and
alligators and such.
You know, when you read, as it reads the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Mm-hmm. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. You know, where the Second Amendment was written into our Bill of Rights by our forefathers in an effort to help protect our independence. As it was described in the Revolutionary War, the term militia referred to groups of men who banded together to protect their communities and towns. And they did so against overstepping governments. In that case, it was Great Britain, 1776, absolutely, right, when we're getting our independence. And it's like when these talking heads always seem to steer away from the actual conversation, which is the Second Amendment was never put in place so that we could go hunt deer.
It was literally against you people.
Against you people that are radicals, people that would overstep and want to rip my God-given rights away from me, right?
These are the people that will put you in a, I've said it again and I'll keep saying it, they'll put you in a quarantine camp over the measles or the chicken pox or anything that they deem dangerous and transmissible.
Yeah, I mean, why stop there? Like, these are the same people who would put us in camps just for having a different ideology than them on Twitter. If we tweet the wrong thing, they'd put us in camps.
I saw a tweet today from someone, and they seem to be like a liberal who's now a more moderate, probably vote Republican. And they said, you know, prior to 2020, I would have agreed to ban AR-15s, but now after your 15 days to slow the spread, after remember when Joe Biden said we're getting tired or something like that? Like, we're starting to get tired of you not getting vaccinated. Like, mm-hmm, after you said all this and you lied continuously and then showed that all you wanted to do was restrict people of their freedoms, yeah, I don't think I'm gonna go for those AR-15s.
I don't think I wanna give up my guns. History always shows when they wanna take your guns away, it's because you gotta be scared of what it is that they've got planned right after.
Absolutely.
Right? And to see this, we talk about globalists in every single episode because it's the war that we're fighting right now. And these are globalist efforts. As long as America continues to be the beacon of freedom in the free world, And as long as we continue to have our guns, we will continue to be the freaking, the beacon of freedom for the world. And when you look at the ideal globalist idea of how it is that they want to rule over humanity, Americans and our Second Amendment right to bear arms is a huge problem for kind of the ushering in of that new world order.
It's like my aunt last year, she got her car stolen in Colombia. Like they, I guess they were like following her. She had a brand new like Toyota SUV, I forgot. And the robbers followed my family to, I guess, a point where they knew they could rob them when they stopped to get something at a bakery. And it was the robbers who had a gun. That's how they were intimidated. That's how they took my aunt's car. And obviously my aunt and my family, they don't have guns.
Right. So, because they're law abiding citizens that follow the law.
Right. If this happens to any of us who have guns here, the situation is going to be a little bit different. You're going to see it on the news.
I mean, I've always felt very strongly that even in schools, you know, like the conversation around gun control in schools is so big right now. And what do? Do they put armed guards? Do they arm the teachers? Do they put
With the teachers, seeing the lips of TikTok expose teachers, unless
I don't agree
with teachers being armed. The teachers are definitely unhinged. I think majority of the teachers we see,
we can all agree,
would probably want to make you say their right pronouns with a gun to your head so that you don't mess up.
Given the opportunity.
So I don't think the teachers is something smaller conservative towns, sure. But in these big cities,
stay away. I don't know about that. With me, my views are more that given the fact that the right to bear arms is the Second Amendment of our Bill of Rights, I feel that that's something that should be taught in schools. I feel that kids should be trained on how to handle guns safely. How you want to talk about gun safety? We don't need laws to do that. Like, start teaching children how it is to practice gun safety. Stop making it
this taboo topic
that then piques curiosity as to what is it? I want to hold a gun. I've never held one before. Oh, let me see it. Situations like that, that if you create a normalcy to it and create a normalcy to using them effectively, safely, I feel that, I mean, clearly the one world government doesn't want that, but in an ideal society, kids would learn how to safely use guns the same way that they have home ec or
but this is the way it used to be up to like the 1970s. And even now, because this weekend when I was ranting about guns and gun control in my story, I said, does anybody want to talk about the fact that before we had all these gun control laws, there was less shootings? Does anybody want to talk about the fact that high school students were taught, they had, you know, rifle classes and shooting classes and stuff like that, and they would even have leagues?
Yeah.
So I had a ton of followers who said, you know, I graduated high school in the 70s, I graduated high school in the 80s, and like, you know, I'm from a small town in this part of the country and in that part of the country, some people even by the suburbs of Chicago. And they'd said, you know, when we were in high school, most kids would pull up in their trucks and like literally would leave their handgun on the windshield or in the back, you know,
it was normal.
They had classes and stuff like that. So there was never any shootings, never any accidents, never any violence. So it bears the question as to what happened when teens had even more access to guns and were carrying guns. They would pull up with duffels and stuff. Like, even if you Google it right now, liberal outlets are going to tell you that what I'm telling you, it's true. That was part of our culture. And it was a much safer culture and times back then.
Well, we look at the difference, you know, AR-15s have been around for quite some time. Ownership of AR-15s has been around for quite some time. And when you look at when these like mass shootings in schools and public areas became wildly popular, we're talking about what, the 90s, with like Columbine being like one of the first one of the first mass shootings that I remember kind of really affecting the psyche of the collective, where you're like, wow, like this is a danger that we all have to deal now, that we have to deal with now. And when you look at what's we briefly talked about this, what's changed through the fact that there was the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and that this was not common, and now here we are. And I think that the New York Times had an article that something like the 27th mass shooting that we've had this year alone. And when you look at it, it's the topics that people don't want to talk about. What's changed since then? Well, we've got social media. Social media has been a huge impact on how it is that people you know, before you used to feel insecure in as a teenager in a cafeteria of, you know, the 500 plus students, now you have to face an entire the entire world on these platforms. Getting bullied on these platforms changes things.
You know, the Uvalde shooter, he, I guess like a recent video came up this week of him with a bag of dead cats. And I don't know if you remember that Netflix documentary, Don't Fuck With Cats.
Yeah.
Do you remember how it escalated to people?
Yeah.
So if you never watched this documentary on Netflix, it's still there because I just watched it again like a month ago. It's a great documentary basically about how online anonymous people found this guy who was a cat and animal murderer, and he would film himself and put these videos on YouTube. It was torturing kittens and dogs and whatnot. And so these anons were alerting the local cops and saying, hey, this guy is going to go from killing cats to killing humans. And they were kind of like, oh, yeah, whatever, sure. They didn't care because they usually don't when you alert the community. Just like this, they should have been alerted with this guy. And then exactly as they said, which was he's going to graduate from killing cats to killing people. And he sure did. He killed a gay man and cut him into pieces. And it was found in the back of this trash. So it's one of those things where if there are signs of people committing these acts of violence already on animals, more than likely they will escalate it to a person. Yeah. And it's unfortunate that the police and the FBI just don't really pay attention when there is people telling them what's up. I
had seen something briefly about this. Natalie Denise had posted about it where I guess there was some kind of program that was actively going on within that school district, which was supposed to help identify potential threats.
An AI, social media.
Talk about that failing miserably.
Well, it's always bureaucracy. It ruins everything.
I mean, there was even complaints from other students. I guess that he had made like
on a Discord
rape threats to other students, and that these things go uninvestigated. Then again, you've got the FBI paying, you know, using the Patriot Act against parents going to school boards. Meanwhile, but of course, you start thinking, and you hate to be conspiracy minded, but it's almost like, whenever one of these shootings happen, it's almost inevitable that people go down the conspiracy rabbit holes because it seems like the narrative always goes the same. Like, it's every time that something like this happens, it just goes back to, we're going to take your guns. We're going to take your guns.
Right.
We had made it a point in last week's episode where, like, let's not fall into the same conversation that everybody has, which is they're going to take your guns, you're not going to take our guns. And it's...
But it's been...
It's inevitable. It is. Like, it's they just push harder every time, which is, you know, transitions into what we want to talk about. Which people talk, the people that are for gun control, right? That more than likely usually don't even own a gun,
never taken a course.
They have no idea how many of our rights have already been taken away. Like, our rights to bear arms have already been infringed upon. So whenever there's a small, like, I remember when they banned bump stocks just a couple of years ago. That was
during Trump
era. 2020, 2019 or whatnot.
Yeah.
And it was such a huge deal. The left thought, like, oh, well, this is no big deal. Why do you guys need the bump stocks? And it's like, well, why do you need to continue to infringe when it's clear that our laws are clear? So what's happened is that over the last, I don't know, several decades, they have stripped away at our laws, at our rights.
We're going to start off with the 60s, 1968, which was when President Kennedy was assassinated. That's one of the first pieces of legislation on gun control. There was a couple of that before, but I just didn't want to take a lot of time and go through every single one of them. So in 1968, President Johnson actually pushed for a gun control act. And what this did was that it actually added language about destructive devices such as bombs, mines, grenades, and it expanded the definition of a machine gun. It also banned importing guns that have no sporting purpose, imposed age restrictions for purchase of handguns. They had to be at least 21 years old, prohibited felons, the mentally ill, and other from purchasing guns, required that all manufacturer and imported guns have a serial number, And according to the ATF, imposed stricter licensing and regulation on the firearms industry. This is in 1968. One thing that I want to make clear is that when liberals and talking heads and people are saying that we need federalized red flag laws, the first thing is that, once again, we live in a constitutional republic. We don't live in a democracy. We have a federalized system. The power goes to the states. So most of our gun laws and regulations actually come from the states. That's why there's about almost like 30 states that have red flag laws. Some other ones don't. What they want to do, which is enforce federalized red flag laws, it opens up the window of opportunity for the feds to say, well, Isabella, you seem a little bit extremist out there on Twitter. You know, maybe enough people contact the FBI and the feds to say that you're a problem, that you're going to hurt the community. And next thing you know, the feds are coming in and taking away your guns, right, which they already do in places like Florida. We explained that last time. So when they want to federalize stuff, it's just kind of like when they wanted to federalize elections and have universal mail-in ballots.
Well, because that's what they want to do. Easier, right? Because
of course, part of the feds,
part of the protection that our country is offered right now is the individual state protection, right? Which is, we saw it, so 2020 was such a clear example of that. Like if you had forgotten what a constitutional republic was, look at 2020 and then compare a state like New York or California
to Florida,
to how Florida or Texas was operating, right?
Absolutely.
Those big differences. And then you don't even have to go as far as 2020. Let's talk about gun laws. Let's talk about Chicago. Chicago's got some, is one of the states, Illinois has some of the strictest gun laws
in the nation,
in the country. And yeah, Colorado as well. Colorado as well. So what do we know? Like a bunch of mass shootings come out of Colorado. So we've already proven throughout time that more laws don't stop these things from happening. We're talking about several decades away from, I mean, we're just talking about 1986.
So now we want to go to the Reagan era, which is a lot of conservatives and Republicans start to talk about Reagan being one of the greatest presidents of our time and fighting communism and whatnot. And there's a lot of dark surrounding Ronald Reagan as well. Although he was a great president, there was a lot of things that I disagree on with mainstream conservatives, including gun laws. Because in 1986, that's when they passed more gun regulations, and they prohibited civilian ownership and transfer of machine guns made after May 19th, 1986. And they redefined the silencer to include parts intended to make silencers. So a lot of people don't even know that you can't even own a machine gun that was created after that date, because they think something like an AR-15 is a machine gun.
Because it goes back to them just lacking basic knowledge.
And I always tell people, a pimped out Honda Civic, if you get a Honda Civic and you pimp it out and you drop it and you put the wheels and you put a, what is it called, the thing in the back?
A little.
Yeah, like if you just make it look cool and faster, it doesn't mean that it's a Ferrari. The same way that both a pistol and an AR-15 are both semi-automatic weapons. And people don't understand that. They literally think that AR stands for like assault rifle, and it does not. It's the brand of the gun.
It's a lack of basic knowledge. And again, the media doesn't help, because you've got the president and you've got the media pushing this narrative that...
And celebrities. I mean, look at Kim Kardashian. I've always told this story to like my close friends. In 2006, I sat behind Kim Kardashian at the St. Pablo tour here in Miami. And we didn't really know we were sitting behind her. When we got there, there was just like a lot of security guards and a lot of security measures. So they checked our tickets like five times. And that usually never happens in the arena. One time to go inside, one time to go to your seats. And Kim had four bodyguards in each corner. And the bodyguards were obviously protecting her, which is good. I mean, I suppose if you have money. But then Kim comes out and says that we need to ban AR-15s and has this whole rant on Instagram and whatever.
Assaulted.
And it's like, you almost died, homie.
You almost died. Like,
literally.
You had people, you are a famous celebrity with security and millions of dollars, and you still had criminals bum rush you in a hotel room to steal your jewelry. So what, you know, at, in a perfect world, what Kim Kardashian should be doing is posting selfies from the shooting range.
Yeah.
That's what she should be doing.
But that's the thing, right? They live in Calabasas and they live in a secure private land full of their own people, and also the, you know, the lot or whatever taking care of them, so they don't care about the small people.
I mean, they've also got talking heads, right? Because you know that these people, though, they don't belong to themselves.
They
so
do.
If Kim comes out and says that she's pro-2A, she'll get dragged on social media, mm-hmm. and, you know, her PR company will go nuts. Like, why would you even make a comment about this? You gotta...
People like her too, and many other Americans, especially us that live in these cities, we don't realize that there are people in many states like Arizona, like Texas, like California, who live like literally at the border, where they can put a foot in Mexico and another foot in the United States of America, where you have cartels growing marijuana and illicit drugs, and you have people crossing. Some are good people, some are not good people. And when you have this vast amount of land, like, you want to have an AR-15. You may not want to have an AR-15 in your 20th floor apartment in Brickell, but these people want to.
Right.
They have,
I would like
20 acres, 30 acres.
In the high rise.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, to the average person that just feels a lot more secure, like, you don't have to guard 20 acres of land and have criminals cross your land.
Right.
You know, so it's one of these things that liberals never put themselves in the situation of others, because most liberals live in blue coastal cities.
You don't know what other people are facing. I mean, we get attacked.
Oh, yeah.
We get doxxed. We get like, oh, yeah. You know, we need to be able to take care of
absolutely.
Ourselves. Because I have psychopaths telling me they're going to do crazy things all the time on the internet.
I had somebody email me last week telling me to go kill myself, even though I hadn't been on the internet for 2 days and didn't comment at all. So, yeah, I definitely sleep next to a gun. So moving on to 1993, which has been Bill Clinton was already in the White House. And so he signed into law the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act of 1993. James Brady was a White House press secretary who was permanently disabled when they tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan. So as a as a consequence, they signed this law, and it required that background checks be complete before a gun is purchased from a licensed dealer, manufacturer, or importer. So
most
people don't realize
in order for you to buy a gun, you need to file a background check.
Florida.
And then you need to be able to buy from a licensed dealer. So it's not even where there's an open market where you can just walk into a store and be like, I want that gun, and walk out.
Mm-mm.
There is a process that gun owners need to go through.
And it depends by state.
It does depend by state.
By the way. In Florida, it's very different. When I bought my first handgun, I think there was a 7-day holding period. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure they took my license. I had to be a verified license.
I think there is a whole depending on where, like if you're buying at a gun show, I think that the rules change, the laws change.
There is, but not if you buy it like at a regular store like mm-hmm. I did. There was, I definitely paid and had to come back for the gun. Mm-hmm. So you don't get it right away. And then you have to take your concealed carry class and whatnot. So it all depends on the state. Bill Clinton also signed another piece of legislation called the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act in 1994. And what this said was that it was a temporary assault weapons ban that went from 1994 to September 2004. And it had actually there's been multiple attempts to renew this ban and have failed. So there was already this sort of prohibition on what they call assault weapons, which, by the way, assault weapons.
Right, I was going to ask, like, how do they define, that seems so broad, how do they define assault weapons?
That's another propaganda term actually made up by some, like, California liberal many, many years ago when they started this whole debate, like, back in the 90s and stuff. And they just kind of, it's like most of the things that they say, like, gun control is yet another, like, propaganda term because they can't really tell you what it is. So they start passing these pieces of legislation. It just kind of confuses the public and makes them feel safe when the news anchor says it, I don't really know the definition in this particular case, but it did say that it outlawed the ability to manufacture, transfer, possess semi-automatic assault weapons. So they did come after semi-automatic weapons before, back in the 90s. It says here, assault weapons, including AR-15s, TAC-9s, MAC-10s, etc., could not be manufactured or sold. It also bans certain high-capacity ammunition magazines of more than 10 rounds.
This is so broad. So basically, any select fire, so assault weapon as defined, is select firearms that allows semi-automatic and fully automatic operations. So now it's not just automatic, even semi-automatic falls into it. And also, this one's hilarious. Number three, a semi-automatic firearm that resembles a military weapon. So if you've got, like you just said, you've got your stuff decked out and you've just got it painted the wrong color or added some accessories to it to make it look scarier so that it looks like a military weapon, then that automatically classifies Absolutely. It. But if you paint it pink and bedazzle it, then maybe that would look less assaulty.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They think that a pimped out Honda Civic, it would be the same as a Ferrari or Corvette. It's not.
Right.
But, you know, that's kind of like the quick timeline of what's happened with gun control from 1968 until now. And then we're not even going into the state laws.
Individual state laws that have taken place.
We did Florida last week. Yeah. And speaking of Florida, I'm seeing here that the Democrats, Florida Democrats actually want to push for an expansion of the state's red flag laws. So it's not enough that you're already have red flag laws in the state of Florida, which are completely unconstitutional. And most times based on allegations, your wife claims that she was beat up. She convinces someone enough to report you as a threat to society or to yourself. Cops come in, take your guns until you're able to prove that you are not guilty. So now the Democrats also want to expand. They don't actually clarify what that means. We don't know, but they did say that they're not going to, because there are Republicans that want to go away with the red flag laws, and they're saying that there's no way that they'll do that.
The conversation that we've recently been having over the last couple of months with our legislators here in Florida has been open carry in Florida, like less gun laws. Like, we want open carry, mm-hmm. and now you've got this stark argument coming up where you've got Democrats and some Republicans, because we talked about it last episode, where we have Republicans voting with these red flag laws being pushed, which doesn't do anything to, at a minimum, the conspiracy narrative is that at a minimum, we all have to agree that whenever we see a tragedy like this, before we've even had an opportunity to mourn the tragic loss of children, the conversation already becomes politicized.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to deny that that's the case, that every time that a tragedy like this happens, it automatically defaults to a political conversation and never really does anything to address the actual issue, which, you know, it's a plethora of things, including mental health, social media, several things that play into the actual heightened of violence that we've seen over the last couple of years.
One thing that I did notice from my followers was that some people, I guess, get caught up in the wake of the emotional news cycle of the tragedy. And they start, well, what if we do this? Like, what if we do that? You know, they start trying to compromise with the Democrats. It's like, dude, we're trying to show you. That's why we're doing this episode, that there's already been a lot of compromise in the last
over the 50 last
years,
couple of decades, right?
You know, 50 plus years. So there's been a lot of compromise, and it's not easy as you think to get a gun, at least here in Florida. I think Texas is a little bit different. But you got to also see how states like Wyoming and what's this other state, Montana. What do you hear from those people? Like, nothing.
They're chilling.
Like, most of those people are loaded with guns.
To remind
you. And, like, you never hear about crap.
Do you remember that school? It was a church shooting that was stopped.
Jack?
It was in Texas.
Yeah, it was Jack.
Guy walks in, and then I think it was something like four different people in the parish were able to pull out guns and stop this guy before he had an opportunity to hurt anybody.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, that's American. Like, that's America.
Well, here.
That's what we want more of. Like, yeah, I want to hear stories of active shooters being stopped by regular civilians that know how to use their Second Amendment right to protect themselves. Those are the stories we need. And of course, the media does nothing. They happen all the time. There's plenty of those stories.
Absolutely. It just happened on the same week of the Uvalde shooting, when some guy went in with, another AR-15 to a high school graduation or something like that. The woman shot and killed him.
Beautiful.
That just happened last week. I also wanted to point out, this is I've just came to my mind, how in Wyoming this year, fifth graders, this is the headline, fifth graders learn to shoot guns by using school gyms as target range.
Beautiful.
And here, I'll pull up the pictures. Here
that,
are the kids.
That's America.
This is America. Fifth graders. Obviously, these guns are not loaded. They're not going to, but they probably have pellets and or some sort of simulation to the bullets. But this has, you never hear anything from these people, like, at all. And they're probably some of the most armed people in America. I mean, I don't have statistics on that. Don't quote me, but I'm sure they do because they're in Wyoming and Montana. But that's as far as our gun control conversation.
We're not experts in any capacity, but we do think that it's important where the conversation consistently goes up to, oh, let's find this middle ground. And the middle ground usually consists of, you know, people, I don't even want to say conservatives because it's not a conservative issue, but who people who truly do believe in the Second Amendment and its necessity have to give leeway every single time to those that oppose.
And I just don't trust, listen, I don't even trust my liberal friends post 2020. Like 2020 changed me. It changed me and it changed many people. When I hear some of my closest friends say that anti-vaxxers and people who choose not to get a vaccine should be basically cast away from society and your insurance premium should be higher and you're the bad person and you need to do it for your community. You're a scientist cultist. You're a scientist worshiper.
And I know for a fact
that you would have an armed security guard at my door, knocking on my door with an AR-15, taking me to a camp to get the vaccine. So you people are the reason why I am the way that I am. Before 2020, this would have been a different conversation. Now, I don't even want to hear it.
I didn't own guns until 2019. I wasn't a gun owner. I had never even shot a gun. And in 2019, you start seeing, they were already amping up for 2020. And I remember that there was talks about like banning again AR-15s. And I'm like, well, I mean, if they're going to, I'm going to be grandfathered in. So I'm going to make sure that I get whatever the hell it is that I need.
People are running.
The numbers in 2020, the sales of gun sales soared in 2020.
When I got ammunition in June versus when I got more ammunition in September, it had already skyrocketed.
At the end of 2020, it's been extremely hard to find ammunition. Yeah. It was really difficult to find, again, because gun sales went up. Even my liberal friends.
Oh, yeah.
Or like,
my instructor that I got a private instructor, he had a bunch of liberal students
that were
from New York.
That's scary.
That were scared. Yeah. But with that being said, we do want to touch a little bit on the Colombian election. So very interesting stuff coming out of Colombia. I'm Colombian and it's fascinating.
Like I mentioned to you earlier, I think that the most fascinating part about it is that the current presidential run in Colombia is the two main contenders couldn't be any more different, but also the same in the sense where they are both running on anti-establishment, if you will.
It's happening all over the world.
Yeah.
It's the polarity of the extreme left and a more populist leadership rising, like Bolsonaro,
yeah,
like Trump, you'd say Viktor Orban in Hungary,
Bukele.
And a lot of times these people are neither right or left. A lot of them do tend to be more right wing, but a lot of times they're populist. So the news from Colombia, really quickly to summarize for those who don't know, is basically the elections. It was an election round on Sunday between Gustavo Petro. He's a socialist left wing ex-guerrilla, used to be part of the ELN, which is a socialist Marxist rebel group, who's committed some of the worst crimes in our country, in my home country. In fact, back in the 80s or 90s, they took over El Palacio de Justicia, which is like the Justice Department, I guess you'd say, in Bogota. And it was like a three-day hostage situation, burned the place, people died, and he was part of that group. He alleges that he wasn't actually there, that he was in jail when that happened. Nevertheless, somebody like him who comes from a far left socialist, communist, Marxist rebel group actually was able to get into politics because it was
and have a long career.
He's been the mayor of Bogota, which is the capital of Colombia, senator now. And so this would be the third time I think he attempts to be president. And he has a lot of support. And on Sunday, we were completely shocked because out of nowhere, there were four parties. And the two main ones that were making the rounds were Petro, the socialist, and the right-wing establishment, Federico, Fico, that's what they call them. You know, you have Maria Elvira Salazar here. Supporting Fico, most of us supporting Fico, the Colombians supporting Fico. This is the establishment, right? And most people, the socialists actually all thought that Gustavo Petro was going to get enough votes to win the candidacy, the president on Sunday. But shockingly, a third option rose to the occasion, a populist. His name is Rodolfo Hernandez, and he won against Fico.
But we have to laugh
because he is the king of TikTok. This is a man that needs an introduction.
Fico is a character and a half. So self-proclaimed
king of TikTok.
He's like in his 70s, older man.
77, yeah.
Anyone who says that he's too old to be an influencer has no idea what they're talking about. 500,000 followers on TikTok, and he kills it. He's hilarious on TikTok. So part of why he really stands out is because completely anti, not just establishment, but any kind of political social norm that has ever been adopted before.
They're calling the people that voted for him the silent majority, majority. They're actually, the New York Times is saying that he is the Colombian Trump. Obviously, the American media is already freaking out about the fact that they did not see this coming. They really thought that the socialist was going to win. So a very interesting character.
It's incredibly interesting. And, you know, part of what I did was just kind of looking into Petro, right? Because like most socialists, this is why I put it in quotation marks when I said, seemingly they're both running on grassroots type campaigns for the people. Mm-hmm. The difference, however, is that Petro, like most socialists that claim to be in it for the people, is actually backed by some spooky characters connected to the ever popular political in the shadows political figure of George Soros. Yep.
Soros has been in Colombia for years now.
So one of Petro's biggest political donors, and has been his entire political career, not just this current presidential election, is a man by the name of Jaime Galinsky. And his a little backstory, his organization actually bought El Banco Colombia, one of the biggest banks in Colombia, with a $50 million investment from George Soros, as well as contributions from the Rothschild family. Wow. So back to the globalist conversation and, you know, validation to the people that believe in conspiracy theories. Here you have quite literally the socialist candidate is very much the globalist backed candidate.
That they think it's for the people, but it's really a Soros puppet.
Which is really a Soros puppet. And then you've got Petro. So Linda tells me, we're trying to discuss what topics are we going to talk about in today's episode. And it's like, we need to talk about the Colombian elections. Have you heard of Petro?
But first, when I call my grandma called me on Sunday morning, my little 85-year-old grandma, cutie, una señora, una dama, and she calls me, and I ask her about the elections, and she's like, well, the good thing is that Petro didn't win. Like, we all thought he was going to win the first round and we were going to have him as president, but now we're going to vote for el ingeniero, the engineer, you know. And she goes, ese señor grosero, like that rude guy. And I was like, why is he rude, grandma? Like, what are you talking about? Like, and she's like, sí, ese señor que dice malas palabras, ese señor grosero. And I had no idea who this guy was. And then later when we go search him and look for his TikToks, and he's calling everybody on camera, hijo de putas, like he's like super angry. He's like curses at everybody, like way worse than Trump. Like Trump didn't really curse that much. This guy slaps someone. Like,
we need to play that.
We need to play this video so that people see how hilarious this guy is. He's like an angry troll, and he gives no fucks, and he's ruthless.
No es así.
So he really doesn't. So the part that got Melinda's like, she's reading out loud an article. We're sitting on her couch and she's like, he's not showing up to political debate. So I heard him in Radio Caracol, and he was basically explaining how, you know, the socialists, he's like, I'm not a politician. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to be able to truly describe what it is, the plans that I have for Colombia, in 2 minutes that could be manipulated by a man who's been propped up as a political figure. So to him, he's like, why am I going to go to these debates if anything that I say is going to be misconstrued? I'm not going to be given a fair shot. I'll go on any podcast. I'll go on any radio show. I just don't feel like I'm going to continue to participate in the debates. And then you tell me, but he did do an interview with CNN.
He did.
He showed up in pajamas. It was like, yeah. I don't even care about, like, this is how insignificant and unimportant you are, which I think is so empowering because it says a lot about his base. Like, he could care less about what the establishment has to say about him. He could care less about whether or not he fits the mold of a politician, whether or not the media supports him. He is 100% being led by a grassroots effort of Colombians that are just sick tired of
the establishment, right? And that's one thing that I did say on my story this weekend, which was, I can't even blame Colombians who want change, who want to vote for Petro, even if they are under this socialist spell, because we haven't had change. We did have change under Uribe. Unfortunately, for people that don't know, they have tainted Uribe's name like they have tainted Trump. So in Colombia, there's a legacy of Uribismo, the same way there's a legacy for Trumpism. And so there's a lot of negative connotation with that name and that party, which is why Fico, the establishment right candidate, was voted out and this guy came to power. This guy, Rodolfo, was the mayor of the seventh largest city of Colombia, Bucaramanga, and apparently he was the best mayor that the city has ever seen.
A business, so back to the mirrored personalities between him and Trump. So grew up in absolute poverty, in a shack with mud walls, and becomes a self-made millionaire. Yeah. Like, he becomes a very successful, wealthy man in Colombia, all self-made. Mm-hmm. So again, kind of the same narrative, like, I don't have to do this.
He didn't take salary while he was el alcalde, the mayor of Bucaramanga.
And he says that he wouldn't, if he gets elected to be president, that he would donate his entire salary, again, mirrored, just like Donald Trump, to Colombian student for scholarships.
Well, that's actually what some Colombians are saying, that they're attracted to him because they want someone with Trumpian ambition and someone who's not going to be troubled by critics and doesn't have to have any tact and be politically correct. So, you know, this is a legacy that our dad Trump has left for the world, which is what drives the globalists insane. I think it was Schwab or one of these globalists that was, you know, at the World Economic Forum. There are less democracies in the world than there were 15 years ago. It's like, because everyone hates you.
It's actually pretty
we
simple,
all fucking
Charles.
Hate you. You know what I mean? So I think it's interesting too that he's taking the Bukele approach, where he says he would declare a national emergency or state of emergency to deal with corruption and violence. Obviously that sparks the fears of people who thinks he's going to become the next dictator of Latin America, and I mean,
everything is so just, what? Again, it's so mirrored. The next dictator, the same thing they said about Trump. Petre's running mate, the vice president.
Oh my God.
If they would have taken the standard BLM social justice warrior, the Democrats wish that they would have had a candidate like this to run as VP. She's everything that Kamala Harris couldn't be.
Actually black. She's actually Afro-Latina Colombia. Like legit, her ancestors are Africans, unlike Kamala Harris, who's Jamaican and Indian. But let's start off with that. She's actually
unlike
black.
Unlike Kamala. And she's again, perfect George Soros cutout, BLM. Copy-paste BLM, social justice warrior. Her entire run is chosen because of the color of her skin, the racial inequalities, so on and so forth. Copy paste. Then you've got the current attack. So again, the same thing as Donald Trump, because your abuela calls him un grosero, the same way that people call Donald Trump un grosero for saying grab him by the
the conservatives didn't like him because of that. It's the same thing that the older conservatives, like my grandma and grandfather, are probably having a hard time, and but they don't care, like anyone but Petro.
Basically. Anybody but Petro. Yeah,
that's the thing now.
The current attack that Petro, the meltdown that Petro's currently having on Twitter is because Hernandez basically said that his wife wouldn't take over the first lady quarters if he was elected. And Petro has now turned this into
a woman issue.
It's a woman issue.
You know, our culture is very traditional. You know, you usually have women do want to be housewives. They're not forced to be housewives. They want to be housewives. That's how I saw my grandma, my mom, my aunt. And I guess, you know, through these, you know, through the times now, women do work in Colombia. Obviously, they have many different positions. But because of the propaganda of misogyny and anti-racism and whatnot, they're trying to come after Rodolfo, saying that he's a misogynist, even though his wife actually runs his campaign and has helped him get to the status of being a millionaire, because she works for him also in his company and is his right-wing person. I guess you'd say even like advisor.
It is.
That's his wife.
Very
is that.
Much depends on it.
But, you know, they're not going to start trying to attack him as an ultra conservative, far right, anti-women, anti probably indigenous people over there, probably anti-minorities, you know. But it's going to be very difficult to go that route because he has built this reputation in his hometown and around that region of being someone who hasn't been caught in anything dirty at all, so far that we know, of course. So one thing that I think people, I say this a lot on my story, which is that conservatives, especially conservatives born here who they have never lived anywhere else, they have this entire impression that we need to blame everything on Russia, China. Russia, China, Russia, China. It's always the same two evil people. And although we're not saying they are the good people, the American intervention and the American culture is way more prominent everywhere else, including South America, with the exception of probably Cuba, than Russia and China ever will. And we see that in Colombia when we mirrored, for example, the BLM. When the whole Floyd thing happened, we had the same thing in Colombia. The same signs, the same Afro-Latinos going out there talking about killings. When the Antifas here were having their CHAZ zone, what was it called?
The autonomous zone.
In Cali, Colombia, where I'm from, we had the same exact mirror thing.
And then a couple of months
Zona
after
Autonoma
that.
De La Primera Linea. La Primera Linea meaning Antifa. They dress like Antifa. They have the shields like Antifa. It all comes from the same group of people.
We even saw Antifa flags come out.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no such thing as Russian or Chinese influence in our home countries. It's all American, which is not really American.
Well, it's all globalist.
Right, exactly.
It's all globalist propaganda, right? And I mean, unfortunately, there are a lot of political figures in American government that are in bed with these people. So then therefore, it almost becomes synonymous when you're like American intervention, because these globalists do own the American, to some degree, own a lot of aspects of the functionalities of the American government.
Why are Colombians so, a very traditionally conservative Catholic country, you know, they just approved or abortions after, I think, like 24 weeks. They used to have a very strict ban on abortion. Who made that happen? None. NGOs. Where does that money come from? Mostly George Soros. Right. Why is such a traditional conservative Catholic country accepting and loving of someone like Petro, who comes from the guerrilla
that has destroyed
Colombia the last 60 plus years? You want me to tell you why? Here it is. The acceptance of the left following the country's 2006 peace process with the largest level group, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, las FARC. Who made that happen? The United States of America through Barack Obama and Joe Biden.
Absolutely.
It was Obama who made the peace agreement happen when President Santos was in power. They signed it in La Habana. which is where the rebels train in with the rebels in Cuba. Okay. And after that, Obama gave Colombia about $40 million in aid or something like that.
So, because that's what our country was during the Obama presidency, was all of
socialism comes directly from Washington, D.C.
Because it's all the campaign. I mean, George Soros and the Open Society have been in Colombia now for over a decade trying to push for the normalization of guerrillas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Humanizing them. That's the social justice cause, is to take these gruesome, violent individuals that murder and rape all in the name of drugs and gun trafficking, and normalizing that and calling it a social, you know, to a line out of Joe Biden's playbook. You know, it's better to have a bullet, a 22 lodged in their lung than, you know, absolutely, to get rid of these people. So there's a reason why the narrative, and to go back to our episode on Nayib Bukele, why the globalists hate him so much. And it's because he is cleaning up crime. The globalist empire gets fed through these black market sort of operations, whether it's MS-13 or the guerrillas out of Colombia or the cartel out of Mexico. They operate through these shadow type of organizations, institutions, whatever you want to call these gangs.
Absolutely.
So it's in their best interest to have these people cause as much chaos, as much commotion as possible, so that it continues to drive immigration into the U.S. to be able to destabilize what once again brings us back to the case in point, the beacon of freedom for the rest of the world. If you destabilize America, you destabilize the world.
You see it now. Look at the wars going on. So, but with that being said, we come to a close of this episode already. We're in 56 minutes. So once again, please share, like, and subscribe.
And I'll just say it, if anybody knows potential presidente Hernández out of Colombia, they can put a word in for us.
Mostly Peaceful Latinas before he's elected, please come join us. You know, we already got the blessing from President Bukele, so we'd like to extend a welcome. Thank you so much, and we'll be back next week.
Have a great day.